Tonight on Banfield, did it have to be so incomprehensibly bad? 3 days after the carnage, sickening new revelations out of Uvalde show that lives may have been saved. Some of Uvalde's children may have been spared had police not made, and I quote, the wrong decision. Can anyone, anything, bring comfort in times of such pain? These experts can, for a while anyway. Wet-nosed ambassadors of peace on the job in Uvalde this hour. Also ahead, a second mysterious disappearance in the hunt for fugitive murder suspect. Her boyfriend is now on the run as well, and friends say he's running scared. And we all want to travel on Memorial Day weekend, or so it usually seems, but this year, who can afford it? You can. We have the expert with the secrets all ahead on Banfield. Hello and welcome to Banfield. We want to know more. We want to know everything, but each new piece of information out of Uvalde, Texas, makes the horrors of what happened on Tuesday seem worse. In a tense and emotional news conference today, the head of the Texas Department of Public Safety shed the fullest and by far the harshest light yet on exactly what happened and when at Robb Elementary School. He confirmed that as many as 19 police officers, including Border Patrol agents with tactical gear, waited outside the adjoining classrooms where Salvador Ramos was killing students and teachers for almost an hour. They waited for almost an hour while students inside were desperately and repeatedly dialing 911 and begging for help, reporting that classmates were dead, but that some were still very much alive, and still the bullets continued to fly, saying, please, send the police. Now, please. That fateful and seemingly fatal decision by the incident commander, who was not even from the Uvalde Police Department, but from the school district police. That decision to hold back in the hallway for almost an hour was not the right decision. So says the director of the Texas Department of Public Safety today. Colonel Stephen McGraw said, quote, it was the wrong decision, period. I want to bring in News Nation senior national correspondent Brian Enten, who is live in Uvalde tonight. Brian, the horror of this tragedy was one thing, but how do you process just exactly what the police admitted to not doing today and the children who may be dead because of it?
Ashley, things have changed so much. At the beginning of the week when we were here, the officials were praising law enforcement. The governor was praising law enforcement. And today we learn the real timeline. And we learned that these 911 calls were made from inside the classroom. There was a fourth grade little girl who called 911 four times while her classmates were getting shot. Four times. The third time she called, she told the 911 operator that 8 to 9 of her fourth grade classmates might still be alive in that classroom, but still, the officers were not going in. All eyes are now on the police response at Robb Elementary. The director of the Texas Department of Public Safety says officers waited too long to go inside and save children.
The benefit of hindsight, where I'm sitting now, of course it was not the right decision. It was the wrong decision, period. There's no excuse for that.
A new timeline is now emerging. At 11:28, the gunman crashed his truck near the school. 2 minutes later, a teacher called 911 and said there was a man with a gun. At 11:31, the gunman started shooting in the school parking lot. At 11:33, he entered the school. Investigators say he entered through a propped open side door, made a turn down the hallway, and entered rooms 111 and 112, where he fired more than 100 rounds. 2 minutes later, at 11:35, three officers enter the school. By 12:03, 19 officers are inside the school in the hallway, and a student calls 911. 911 from one of the classrooms. At 12:15, more tactical officers arrive. 1 minute later, the same student calls 911 for a fourth time and says 8 or 9 children are still alive in her classroom. But it's not until 12:50, an hour and 15 minutes after officers first entered the school, that they breach the classroom door and kill the gunman. The Texas Department of Public Safety says the incident commander made the decision to wait instead of going in immediately.
Sir, who was the incident commander, and has that person been suspended?
The chief of police of the Consolidated Independent School District is the incident commander.
And has that person been released?
It's his school. He's the chief of police, okay?
Has he been suspended?
I'm not going to discuss this.
But you said the policies
were clear. Ongoing criminal investigations.
You said the policies were clear that they should have gone right in.
I'm not going to get into that.
DPS says the chief believed the situation had transitioned from active shooter to a barricaded gunman. They say he was wrong, and the waiting may have cost lives.
Forget how I'm doing. What about the parents of those children? Don't forget about me. What about me or our officers and stuff like that? We take an oath to uphold the law and protect people. And anytime something tragic like that, we want to know why it happened and if we can do better next time. It's a bottom line. And call it like it is. It's tragic.
Okay, so where is the school police chief tonight? His name is Peter Arredondo. He was not at that press conference today. He was the commander, but he wasn't at the press conference. He has not been taking phone calls. We've gone to his house. Other media outlets have gone to his house. He's not answering the phone. We've learned a little more about him. He's been a police officer for quite some time. He was recently elected to city council here, but interestingly, his picture is no longer on the website. Ashley?
Yeah, I think that's a story, Brian, that is still to be told. And in the meantime, I was watching your timeline that you laid out in your story, and I want to add to it with you. And let's just talk through this a bit, because I think the 911 calls added to that timeline really, really help here. So let's talk about this. It's really a disturbing picture. At 12:03, a little girl in room 112 places the very first 911 call. And this is the first time, Brian, that somebody calls from inside the actual scene of the crime. And at the same time, there are 19 police officers outside in the hallway as she's calling 911.
Yeah, I think that was one of the most shocking things that came out of the press conference today. Initially, three police officers went in and were in the hallway, but just minutes later, they had 19 police officers right there in the hallway outside the door. And the chief, the commander on the scene, was still making the call for them not to go in. What we were told today is he thought that it was no longer an active shooter situation, that it was a barricaded gunman situation. But you're talking about these 911 calls. They were still getting calls from people inside the classrooms. That's what's so perplexing.
So what's even more devastating to learn, and one of the little girls told a CNN producer that she had taken the phone out of the hands of her dead teacher to make these 911 calls. And I'll go on with the timeline here. At 12:10, that's 7 minutes after that first call. Well, let's go to 12:13. Let's go to 12:10. The 911 call comes in again from that same little girl in room 112. And at this point, she's reporting there are 8 to 9 kids who are dead. And then at 12:13, the girl makes a third phone call to 911. So now this is 10 minutes since her first call, okay? And at 12:16, this is another call. This would be the fourth time that this little girl calls 911. And at this point, she reports something even more critical, and that is that there are still 8 to 9 students alive. So now 911 knows that there are still children who are alive in that classroom. 3 minutes later at 12:19, a 911 call comes in from the next classroom, the adjoining classroom, that's classroom 111. The little girl was calling from 112. This is room 111. But the caller hangs up right away because some other student yells, "Hang up." At 12:21, yet another 911 call comes in and the operator can hear shooting. The operator hears 3 distinct gunshots. So, Brian, this means that Calls are coming in from both of the adjoining rooms. The police are still outside the door of both of those classrooms. We know that the shots are being fired because the operator hears the shots being fired. We hear the child say there's still 8 or 9 of us in here who are alive. And yet it's still being considered as though it's not an active shooter situation. I think this is going to be the biggest answer that they're going to have to figure out and report to us.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to make sense. We asked today at the press conference, was there some kind of communication breakdown? I mean, clearly the 911 center was getting the calls. Was that information being relayed back to the chief and as he was in command? And they didn't get into that. They said basically that's part of the investigation, but it would appear that he knew what was going on. The 911 calls kept coming in, but you know, it seems either A, he was really under the assumption that this was now a barricaded shooter situation, or B, he just wanted to wait for the cavalry to arrive. You know, there was more backup on the way. There was a SWAT team on the way, and he made the decision that he was going to wait, which, by the way, is totally against all of the active shooter trainings out there, trainings that this department had received just months earlier. So it just doesn't add up.
Okay, so the next call that comes in, the last one was at 12:21. This next one is 12:36. And it is again the little girl from room 112. And she says to the operator, he shot the door. Now, keep in mind that time. It's 12:36. The very first time, that's 5 phone calls ago from this little girl. The very first time she called 911 was 12:03. So this is 33 minutes that this little girl has been in that room with that shooter. And she's called 5 times. So the next thing she says at 12:43, because the operator has asked her to stay on the phone but be silent. So that's why you see all these times. It's the same girl. She says, please send police now. And another 3 minutes, she says she hears the police next door. Next door, maybe out in the hallway or in the classroom next door. At 12:47, she says again, please send the police now. So what you're seeing with this timeline and this little girl's reporting in real time is that she knows the police are in there. She knows they're in the school and she knows they are close by, maybe even just a wall away. And yet on her 5th 911 call, she is still left begging for help.
I mean, it's heartbreaking to think about what she must be going through now and what was happening in that classroom. And she was obviously hoping that the police were going to come in. We do know that the officers were out in the hallway. They were also evacuating the other classrooms. We've seen videos of them pulling children out through windows. But again, the big issue here is that the decision was made not to go in and kill the shooter immediately and rescue the kids who were in those rooms.
And that decision, Brian Enten, left this little girl for 47 minutes with dead bodies all around her, begging on the phone 5 separate times. This 5th call lasted quite a long time because the next thing that happens is at 12:50, and that's 47 minutes after she first called. At 12:50, the operator can hear over her open line, the operator can hear the gunshots, and this is the time we suspect they've actually finally come in the door and killed the gunman, because 1 minute later, the operator reports hearing noises like the officers are now moving the children out of the room. And the one detail at this time that I just can't understand is that it was a janitor's key that they finally used in order to open the door to go through. Were they waiting for a key to go in? Was that the thing that held them up? Or were they afraid that it was an active shooter who would shoot them? And was that what held them up? Were they waiting for tactical gear? Because that's what we heard originally. What on earth could they have been waiting for that suddenly was solved with a janitor's key?
Well, look, the story has changed, Ashley. I mean, what we found out on Tuesday was different from what we found out on Wednesday, and what we found out on Thursday was different from what we found out on Wednesday. And then we get this big in-depth press conference today with this full timeline with the director from TPS who comes here to sort of set the record straight. And what he says is, so far, based on the interviews, they say that the chief, the commander of the situation, thought it was a barricaded suspect. But again, we go back react to all of those 911 calls, and we still really don't know why they didn't go in. I mean, yes, they needed a key to get in, but, you know, the director today didn't seem to say that was the reason. I mean, surely they had other ways to bust in that door. You've seen the way police bust in to suspects' houses all the time. They have ways, and they didn't go in.
Yeah, and you know, I just keep thinking, and listen, I'm not a tactical officer, but it's obvious often you use a diversionary device like a flash grenade, or you create a diversion outside that shocks the shooter, and instantly, you know, you breach the system and you take out the target. There's so many ways. As a parent, I was going through my mind that I would have been able to get into that, you know, hopefully unscathed, but who the hell cares unscathed at this point? So there is something else that has come to light today, which I think is just, it's devastating to hear, but it's also extremely enlightening, because these brave little kids have been able to piece together what happened inside that room. And one of these children witnessed some of this because he was under a table with other kids. And the tablecloth came down and I think obscured them. But my God, did this child ever have incredible detail, Brian.
Yeah, and these kids, their stories, and you know, they're uncomfortable to talk about. And all of this is uncomfortable to talk about. It's almost like our brains aren't meant to process the idea of 19 little children, fourth graders, being murdered inside their classroom. So some of this stuff is hard to, you know, to portray, and it's almost like you don't want to talk about it, but you have to. And some of the stories we've heard, you know, kids who covered themselves in their classmates' blood so that they could lay there and also look dead so that they could survive. We heard stories of other children coming out so covered in blood that the first responders thought that they were shot, and they were not shot. They were just close to the other kids in their class. So you can't even imagine what they're going through now, what all of these kids are going through. There was this young man, Jaden Perez, who was inside the school. Listen to what he had to say.
The shooter shot through the window and hurting my friend and my teacher. Like, my teacher got hurt, like, on right here, like, on what, I don't know which side, but she got hit on the side. And then my friend got, like, shot through the nose. And they both had to get surgery. McKenna, Tess, Annabelle. Basically almost all of them. I don't want to know what, because I don't want anything to do with another shooting. And me in the school. And I know it might happen again, probably,
he says, probably will happen. That courtesy of CNN. Brian, also, I want to play this this moment. A little boy named Edward Timothy Silva, his classroom was right nearby. He had some extremely profound observations as well. Take a look.
Well, I was sleeping with my mom and dad again because I was a little scared. Well, I have the fear of guns now because I'm scared someone might shoot me.
And Brian, another little girl who did not survive, her voice can be heard by us tonight because of a post that was on Facebook. It was a video that she made for Mother's Day, wishing her mother and all other mothers a happy Mother's Day. Her name is Layla Salazar. And again, this was her Mother's Day message to everyone, this little girl who didn't survive. Listen to her just incredibly sweet voice.
Hey guys, today is Mother's Day, okay? And if you haven't said happy Mother's Day to your mom, what are you doing? Go say it right now. And I just want to wish all the moms out there happy Mother's Day, even though you're not my mom. And I also wanted to say, I hope all the moms out there have an awesome and blessed day, okay? And yeah, that's all I wanted to say, and bye, have a great happy Mother's Day.
And that's Layla Salazar. And Layla did not make it out of that classroom. Brian, thank you for bringing us these details. This is extraordinarily difficult. For people listening, it's difficult. I can't imagine what it's like for you being down there and, you know, bringing it in firsthand. So thank you for all your dogged work this week.
Thanks, Ashley.
Brian Enten reporting live for us. One of the other extraordinary heroes, and I just want to be real with you for a moment. This is really remarkable. The firsthand account from a little girl, fourth grader, named Mia Cirillo. I say she's a hero because she really was so brave. She was the one who took the phone out of the hands of her dead teacher so that she could dial five times. Mia Cirillo. Remember that name. She lived. And this is why we know what happened inside that room. She's the eyes and ears for us in this incident. She gave descriptions and instructions to the 911 operators, which sadly were ignored. She was too afraid to appear on camera for an interview with CNN, and she didn't even want to be interviewed by a male. She would only be interviewed by a female. And so the female producer named Nora Noose at CNN took this account from little Mia Cirillo, and I'm just going to tell you what Nora Noose told the rest of us. The shooter, according to little Mia, pushed his way into the front door of the classroom by shooting out that window and stared the teacher right in the eye as he basically forced her backwards towards her desk and looked her right in the eye and said, "Good night," and shot her dead. He then began firing indiscriminately, killing the other teacher, leaving the children literally with no teachers, and also killing just scores of other children. There was so much shrapnel flying around. Little Mia Cirillo says that she was hit by shrapnel in her back and in her shoulders. When she was on the ground, she saw the shooter then go into room 111, because Mia's in room 112. And she watched the shooter going into room 111, which is the adjoining room. And she could hear all the kids screaming in there. And she could hear the gunfire in there. This was when she had the wherewithal at the ripe young age of 11 to get that phone out of her dead teacher's hands and call 911. She also had the wherewithal to reach over to her dead friend and smear the blood of her dead friend on her own body to make it look like she'd been shot and then play dead. And she would have to play dead for almost an hour. One of her friends who was next to her was shot in the leg. And Mia and her friends had to hold their hands over their friend's mouth to muffle her screams, because they were afraid that once that shooter, who had gone over to room 111, would hear her friend screaming and come back for them. Mia then also tells the CNN producer, Nora Noose, that she could hear the shooter, once he had finished shooting in the next room, turn on music. And she described the music as sad. And when the producer asked, "What do you mean by sad?" she said it sounded like, quote, "I want people to die" music. She said during her interview to this producer that she heard the grown-ups say police were outside the room and wouldn't come into the room. And that is the only time she broke down and cried in her interview. If all of this isn't unbearable enough to hear, I want you to hear what happened to Mia once the siege was over, because it wasn't over for her. As she and the kids were being evacuated, she saw her parents outside, and she screamed out, "Mom, Mom." Her parents saw her as well, and the police would not allow them to interact, would not allow Mia to get to her parents, nor her parents to get to Mia. Instead, they loaded Mia and the other children into a school bus and drove off. And the parents of Mia said that they did not tell the parents where they were taking the kids. They had no idea where that school bus was driving off with their child, who was covered in blood. At this point, they may not have known that it was her friend's blood. Ultimately, where they were taken was a hospital. But Mia Cirillo gave us that account to tell us exactly what happened inside those windows. I also want to tell you a personal story right now, and it is adjacent. So, last week in my town where I live, a teenager took his own life. That shocked my community and devastated my community so much, they canceled the prom. that night. They canceled the prom that night because, of course, you don't hold celebrations after that kind of a tragedy. But I cannot help but think about that when thinking about the shooting in Uvalde right now, because as all of this is happening and still happening, there is another event that's going on in Texas right now. The NRA is holding its annual meeting in Houston, and I am not going to talk about guns. I am not going to talk about the politics surrounding guns. I do want to explain what the event is, though, because I don't know that everybody understands what this conference is. The NRA annual conference is a celebration of the Second Amendment. And whether you're a gun supporter or whether you are not a gun supporter, you do have to ask yourself this question. Is this the right time to be holding a celebration of anything? One child died in my town, and thousands of students postponed their prom that very day. Why did those students feel it was right to make that decision when the NRA leadership felt that that was not the right decision, that their celebration would go forward? I want to bring in News Nation's Kelly Beeson, who has been following the planning of the NRA convention very closely. Kelly, obviously, there are those who are pro-gun, there are those who are anti-gun, and the anti were pretty robust in the protest outside of the convention center. Was anyone at the NRA, did they express any reservations about going forward with the celebration and this event?
Well, several people did, Ashley, including a Texas lawmaker and musicians who were set to perform this weekend. Today at the NRA conference, there was a focus on the victims of the Uvalde school shooting, and outside, protesters were demanding change.
What brought me out here is that I want to stop this insanity.
Protesters line the streets outside of the NRA's annual conference in Houston today, an event taking place days after the Uvalde school shooting, where 19 children and two teachers were killed 300 miles to the west.
It's a savage and barbaric atrocity that shocks the conscience of every single American.
Prominent lawmakers who moved forward with appearances included Texas Senator Ted Cruz, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, and former President Donald Trump, many speaking out, condemning the shooting as evil, and doubling down on the importance of defending the Second Amendment.
The Second Amendment is about deterrence. It's about ensuring government respects the rights and the liberty of citizens.
Those who have decided not to speak include Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, while U.S. Senator John Cornyn and U.S. Representative Dan Crenshaw pulled out, noting changes in their schedules. Musicians Don McLean, Larry Gatlin, Lee Greenwood, and Larry Stort also withdrew. And Texas Governor Greg Abbott, who was set to attend, addressed the convention by pre-recorded video instead, with a focus on Uvalde.
We urge everyone here today, everyone across the country, to pray for those in Uvalde who are impacted by this atrocious act.
Eric Rubin, a fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice, says while the events in Uvalde may make gun control more of a central issue in the midterms, significant changes to legislation would be a challenge, especially with the 50-50 split in the Senate.
There's entrenched opposition to any sort of gun regulation, especially within the Republican Party right now. So anything that's likely to come out would probably be weaker than a lot of gun safety advocates might want.
And Rubin went on to say that laws that may get more attention and have a better chance at passing are those that incentivize early warnings to law enforcement, essentially reporting someone who represents a potential threat of harm to themselves or to others, Ashley.
Kelly Beeson, thank you for that. You know, in times of such staggering loss, there are really no words. But sometimes no words are best. No words, four legs, and tails that wag at the sight of us. Canine compassion in Uvalde when we come back.
What makes News Nation different than the other network out there? Well, they're giving it to you down the middle.
They're focused on the facts and not opinions.
It's just straight to the point, fact-based news.
If you're able to see yourself in the network.
I think News Nation is the most honest news station out there.
They give you a chance to decide on your own.
It's neither left or right, and it's news for everyone.
News Nation gives you straight, unbiased news. And if more people would watch News Nation, we'd have a lot less division in this country.
In times of unmitigated heartbreak, the broken take comfort wherever and whenever they can find it. In Uvalde tonight, many are finding comfort in visitors who often can make things better just by showing up. News Nation's Brooke Schaefer has the story.
I talked to a volunteer at a memorial not too far from this elementary school. At that memorial, there are flowers, there are balloons, and there are therapy dogs. That volunteer told me she hopes it brings some comfort in the chaos.
We see emotion. We see crying, we see tears, we see shock, pain.
The pain palpable at this memorial just minutes from Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. 21 hearts, each with a name and notes from families devastated. In the middle of the grief, some temporary comfort.
We try not to say too much because at this point there's not a lot to say.
Bonnie Fear is the Canine Crisis Response Coordinator for Lutheran Church Charities. She and a team of volunteers traveled to Texas with blue and white crosses and some furry companions.
We did have a few people we met with yesterday that told their story. When the dog came up, they started talking.
Comfort in the chaos, she called it.
It brought me some comfort. Just took my mind off things for a bit.
Candy Esparza is family friends with Ellie Garcia, one of the 19 kids shot and killed.
It brings comfort for them, but it doesn't change the way that they feel because nothing can change what happened.
While a hug or a pet won't change much, these volunteers hope for even a small moment, it calms the wave of grief.
I haven't seen a lot of anger, but I know it's there. Just a lot of sadness, a lot of loss of hope. Just a hopeless situation, like, here we go again. And we never thought it would happen here.
And she told me that she will be here until at least Monday, but they'll bring in a new wave of dogs if they're still needed here in Texas. Ashley.
News Nation's Brooke Schaefer reporting for us from Uvalde. Thank you for that. Coming up, your one-time girlfriend is murdered. Your current girlfriend is the primary suspect. But for 2 weeks now, she's also a fugitive. What do you do and where do you go? We're going to answer at least one of those questions next. And then there were two disappearances. There's been quite a twist in that manhunt or woman hunt for the fugitive who's suspected of shooting dead her boyfriend's secret lover a few weeks ago and then fleeing to New York and vanishing. Colin Strickland, that boyfriend, a professional cyclist in the center of this murderous love triangle, well, now he himself has fled the state of Texas, supposedly out of fear that he could actually be the next victim. A friend of Collins is telling the Daily Mail, quote, none of us can sleep. He is staying out of sight until she's caught. I do know where he is, but I am not mentioning where for his safety. He is not in Texas. He's got completely out of Dodge. Until she's caught could really be a while because Caitlin Armstrong, the fugitive yoga instructor turned murder suspect, has been on the run for 2 weeks now. She was last seen on surveillance video at New York's LaGuardia Airport, having flown from Texas on May 14th, which means the search has pretty much been narrowed down to planet Earth. Joining us now is attorney and former Miami-Dade prosecutor Mark Eiglarsh. Mark, you know, I think about Colin Strickland saying he's running and staying under the radar because he fears for his life. And I keep thinking, isn't that what the police are for? When this kind of thing happens, don't they provide protection for people like Colin?
Yeah, in movies, in the real world, when you genuinely fear possible death, you get out of Dodge. And I understand you want him to help police. Maybe a combination of both. Can he help police from whatever location he now exists in?
Yeah, okay, well, that maybe he's let them know where he is, but the rest of us know. So a friend of his, the same one who said he'd fled for his safety, his name is David. He didn't want to give his last name. He said this about Caitlin Armstrong, the fugitive, because he was friends with both Colin and Caitlin. He said there were zero red flags. She was always such a nice person. He told the Daily Mail, quote, before the murder, the person I knew was a really sweet and nice human that was trying to make her dream in this world, whatever that was. And, you know, we always say that an affair is a classic motive for a murder, but prosecutors don't even need to prove motive, but they do need to prove a lot more.
That's correct. So they can never really pinpoint all the time exactly why somebody kills. And again, she's presumed to be innocent. But the fact that there was a love triangle here certainly makes her suspect number one.
So then we decided to look up what flights were out of LaGuardia that night on May 14th, because that's when she spotted in LaGuardia. And we narrowed down the flights to countries that don't have extradition treaties with the U.S., thinking that might be what she was thinking. She's an educated woman. And this is the list that we came up with that had flights that day and that night out of LaGuardia. Cambodia, Indonesia, the Maldives, Morocco, Nepal, Russia, and Vietnam. And let's just count out Russia for now. But Nepal stood out. And I'll tell you why, Mark, because she's a yoga instructor. And, you know, Nepal is a mecca for people who not only take yoga, but teach yoga. There are yoga retreats. There are yoga instruction courses regularly in Nepal. And it made me wonder if that might not be a place that would be smart to search.
First of all, I am thoroughly impressed at your staff for being able to come up with that, to narrow it down to seven places that I don't ever want to go to, but maybe that's where she went. If she went to any of those places, this is an enormous problem for law enforcement. They're not going to be able to get her back, most likely.
Literally, without an extradition treaty, that's just it. She can enjoy Everest and yoga and anything else if she's in any one of those countries.
It is extremely likely. The fact that the feds are now picking this up increases the chances that there'll be more resources devoted to it and maybe some ways to get her. But I don't know. If she goes to these places with no extradition at all, that's a problem.
Okay, 20 seconds left. If you're Armstrong's attorney, don't even know if she has one, but if you get a phone call from her, what's your obligation, if anything?
Well, first to ask her, what do you want to do? And if she wants to come in, she thinks she's misunderstood, we make arrangements to have her come in and be heard.
But you can't say anything to the police about her whereabouts?
Absolutely not. Attorney-client privilege, she should be able to have a sacred relationship with me and tell me whatever she wants to without me telling law enforcement.
Well, Mark, this story's not over. The hunt continues 2 weeks now. I'm going to have you back as soon as we do find her and find out what's next for her. Thank you.
Yeah, great work. Your staff did amazing work, by the way.
It's a crack team, I know. Thank you, Mark, and have a good Memorial Day weekend. And that reminds me, it is Friday night, and it's Memorial Day weekend, right? This is the unofficial start of summer, so for a lot of people that means travel, but maybe not this year. Between the pandemic and inflation, the costs just seem to be out of reach, and in some cases, resorts are actually price gouging. Well, you know what? Start packing your bags anyway, because we've got travel expert Johnny Jett coming up next with some tips and some tricks on how to save hundreds of dollars this weekend alone. His secrets are next. To travel or not to travel? That is the question being debated in millions of American homes right now. And it should be a no-brainer. Memorial Day weekend, the unofficial start of the summer travel season, is here. But when you look at gas prices, airline prices, hotel prices, you can't help but flinch. According to our brand new News Nation Decision Desk HQ poll, 74% of us are very concerned about inflation. 43% of us have made changes to summer travel because of inflation. And 64% of us have outright canceled our vacation plans because of cost. And maybe you are one of them. But it might not be too late or too expensive to go on a trip. Glad you've joined us, because someone who knows everything about getting the best deals and vacations is Johnny Jett. He's the founder and editor-in-chief of JohnnyJett.com, a travel site that has become a first stop for thousands of vacationers looking to simplify travel. Okay, Johnny Jett, one of our producers went to go and book the same resort she goes to every summer with her family, and prices had tripled. That sounds like gouging to me, and I'm wondering if it's a trend.
I wouldn't call it gouging, but it's really supply and demand. I mean, it's happened everywhere. So, I mean, same thing. I used to be able to fly L.A. to New York for $99. It's now $600 round trip, at least. So I just think there's so many people who want to get out there right now. They've been holed up for the last 2.5 years, and they want to see their family, and I'm one of them right now. I'm actually on a trip right now with my family.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. But can you tell me where the cheapest places to go are? I mean, there's got to be some gems out there for those who just can't afford, you know, Paris or something fancy, New York, you know, somewhere else that we can afford.
Well, you know, if you want to look at the currency exchange, go to Canada. It's, you know, you can drive there for most of the U.S. It's 22% off because their dollar is much weaker than ours. Or you go to Turkey where their lira is so devalued, and South Africa, you can get really good deals once you're there. I mean, when I go to Canada, I'm going to Canada next week, and when I go, let's say I spend $100 at a hotel, it's really only spending $78. So it's a great savings. Instead of going to other places, actually, even Europe right now, this week it went down, the euro went down to 103. It's 107 right now, but it's a bargain compared to the summers previous.
That's a good exchange rate. Yeah, and I hear you on the Canada thing. That's where I'm from. So whenever I go home, it's like 30% off. I love it. So the best time to book, I did not realize this, is like now, because the pandemic rules for canceling your flights are still in play. And it looks like June is sort of a bad time for price increases. So lock your flights in now. Is that the order of the day?
Well, you should have locked them in 4 months ago. But if you haven't, you want to buy them before June 1st, because they are going to go up, and you want to take advantage of these deals so you can change your flights right now. You know, even if you book right now for December and you decide not to go, you'll be able to cancel that or change it for no fee. You'll be able to cancel and get your money back unless they cancel the flight, but you'll be able to at least put that money towards another flight.
Okay,
which is why, by the way, I recommend booking your trips on U.S. carriers, because let's say you're going to go to France. Instead of booking on Air France and you decide not to go, you know, you can't go to Florida. But if you book it on Delta, United, or American, you know, if you decide not to go to France or wherever you're going to go, you can go to Florida, Hawaii, California. You know, you'll be able to use it easy credit.
Yeah, that's smart. That's smart. Okay, then the next thing is gas is a killer right now. So is this the time to maybe be looking at an all-inclusive resort where you go, stay, don't spend any money traveling around, and get everything looked after in one spot?
Well, it's not a very immersive experience if you are going to like try and go to see a different culture or something, or see the local stuff. But yes, that is a great way to save money. Cruises are another way to save money because, you know, all the food's included and entertainment. And if you're with your friends, you don't have to worry about who's going to pick up the tab because it's all paid for.
Haha, good one. That's always a great wedding too, right? The food and the entertainment and everything's all paid for.
Definitely.
Johnny
Jetta,
sure. I hope you enjoy Stamford, Connecticut, by the way. It's nice and close to where I live, so it's like you're in my backyard.
I grew up around here.
Oh,
and my wife's
nice
from Canada, so.
Okay, now we have to have drinks. It's just, that's settled. Thank you. It's good to see you.
You too. Take care.
Okay. So, folks, I'm with you here. This has been a pretty hard week. It's been overwhelming for the victims and their families in Uvalde, and it's been gut-wrenching for the people who live there. And it's been, you know, it's been heartbreaking for everybody else, just ordinary Americans, you and me, who can only just watch as this unfolds on TV. So I gotcha. And after the break, we've put together some resources to help you and your family get through a very upsetting time in America. Just grab a pencil and paper. I'll be right back with that info. If you're feeling a little down about what's been going on this week in Uvalde, take these numbers down. This is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. The helpline is 1-800-950-NAMI or 6264. You can email helpline at NAMI.org. We also have information for the crisis text line. You can text the word home to 741-741, and you can connect with a crisis counselor. It's 24/7 and it's free. And we could all use, you know, a little bit of help. Self-care, folks. Please enjoy a safe and peaceful Memorial Day. See you Monday.